Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. It was not your usual groundbreaking ceremony. The mayor, councillors, business leaders, residents, and others gathered on Walton Street earlier this week. Behind them, construction equipment and workers in hard hats were busy tearing up the road. It is part of a major upgrade of water and sewers that are more than 100 years old. There's never a good time to undertake such a massive project. Yet, as you will hear on today's show, Councillor Les Andrews will explain why it has to be done and the impact on businesses, residents, traffic, and much more. While we were talking, he also gave a quick update on the walk-in clinic and the future of policing in the town. I'm so pleased to have with me today Port Hope Councillor Les Andrews. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you, Rob. Nice to be back.
For some listeners who may not be familiar with street names in Port Hope, Walton Street is the main street in Port Hope. This year, the downtown business district is being impacted. What is being done?
We're taking the section from Queen Street to Ontario Street and stripping it down, replacing the sewers, the water lines, building it back up with some new infrastructure, some new streetscape changes, especially around Lent Lane. And it's just like it's over 100 years old and it's deteriorated. We have no idea when the sewers will finally give way. They have done so in the past and we're into fixes. So this is a one and done situation for this section.
How long is it going to take to complete this section?
The estimate is it should be done by mid-November.
How urgent is it to get it done?
In terms of, should it have been done before this, or is this the right time to do it, or could we wait?
Pick one and answer it. That all sounds good to me.
I guess you can always say, well, you know, it could probably last another year or whatever. But judging from the first part that we did a year or so back from sort of Toronto Road down to Pine Street, it was in pretty rough shape. And it probably didn't, the sewers, et cetera, probably didn't get as heavily used as the commercial part further down. So it's a bit of a roll the dice, take your chances if we kept delaying it. There's never a good time to do it. You know, we came out of COVID, the retailers are suffering. This sort of brings them another whammy, but it's got to be done, and hopefully the townspeople and visitors will support the enterprises.
I'd like to talk a bit more about the impact of the business in a bit, but just in terms of understanding the project itself, what is currently down there in terms of infrastructure?
Old sewers that are galvanized pipe. We sent cameras down, and there isn't only cracks in the sewage system. There are holes. So it's in bad shape. There's a lot of brick infrastructure that's crumbled down there that sort of from the manhole covers that leads down to the sewers. It's pretty dicey.
What is going to replace the old sewers and water mains?
New, of course, probably the water mains probably will be, and I'm not an engineer. I would imagine more PVC than iron, and I would imagine they'll use concrete sewers.
Now, I understand this project is not just about sewers, that there are other things that are going to take place. Can you just elaborate a little bit about what else is going to be done while you're replacing the water mains?
Yeah, so some things that are quite clever in terms of the ability to plant trees of a larger size and have them supported so that they will grow and nourish. And that was a bit of a contentious issue with the former council that said, well, historically we didn't have trees on Walton Street. Well, we did. And another argument was, well, the trees will block the signage. And I've always been a proponent of making it as treescape friendly as possible. And I said, well, go to Coburg. Have a look at how many trees they have in their downtown core. And there's no impact to signage or anything like that. So I think sometimes we get caught up in historical things that, yeah, you know what, aren't quite accurate. The other thing that was proposed that I sort of thought was the way the turning lanes were going to be affected. So if you're coming eastbound down Walton Street and you get to the lights at Ontario Street and go to make a left, there's no left-hand turn lane going to be there because they're going to be bumping out the sidewalk at Levin Lane to give it more pedestrian access, which I agree with. And my problem with that is cars going westbound along Walton, if they want to make a turn onto John Street, which is one way, will they be able to make the turn? Because you know how traffic stacks up and people block the ability to turn. And I'm being assured that no, we've done traffic studies and we're confident that this will work. Well, keep my fingers crossed on that one.
What is the cost of construction?
It will be slightly, I think it's between 6 and 7 million for this for the next two phases.
And who's paying for this?
Who's paying for it? We are.
No government grants, anything
There
like
probably
that.
is some grant money, but the bulk of it will fall on the municipality.
Now, clearly, there will be impacts on a couple of areas, and you've already mentioned those, but I'd like to explore them a little bit further. And that is the traffic and the impact on the downtown businesses. Now, in terms of traffic, during construction, what's going on with parking?
Well, all the spaces, of course, on Walton Street between Ontario and Queen, on Ontario all the way down to the mill, that you can't park there. So you either park on the north side of Walton in the lots behind, around where the liquor store is or the PharmaSave and everything, or south, Queen Street. Actually is easier to park on Queen Street now than ever before, but I think that's because a lot of people aren't venturing downtown to park in that area. There is some public parking available behind on the south side of Walton Street, sort of where the park is, and behind John Street. It's paved parking, and we're being pretty diligent about sending the bylaw people out there.
Why is that necessary to be so diligent?
Well, there's two schools of thought on that. One, to have the people say, let's make it free parking, in which case, will it be clogged up by the retailers only and their staff and leaving their cars parked for the full 8-hour shift? So that kind of is counterproductive. And then the other half are saying, holy crow, it's inconvenient enough to the retailers. It should be free parking. So we're going to have a bit of a discussion tonight at council on that. And I'm kind of I'm open-minded on it. I think there's arguments on both sides. I've suggested that we create parking wherever we can, on Ontario Street specifically in front of the Gandy Hotel. There was a area that was yellowed out, striped out for taxis. Well, you know what? We sacrificed that. So we opened that up. We created a parking spot there and a bus stop. And then on the other side of Ontario Street, similarly, there are taxi spots. We blocked them out and made them available for parking. So wherever we can, we're trying to create.
What about congestion? Has there been an increase in congestion in the traffic downtown?
Yeah, well, I haven't really experienced it, and I'm downtown every day, unless I'm missing the traffic hour or traffic minute in Port Hope. It doesn't it, it it's not bad at all. Now, there's other construction sites going on. Highland Drive, because of a water main problem up there, has been closed off. Cavan Street until we get the file factory torn, or whatever part is going to be demolished, and open Cavan up again, and Robertson Street for a couple days because we have to put in some water capability there for a business that's going to be opening. So we're in the perfect storm.
What about buses in the
Buses are
downtown
free.
in terms of stops and being able to access if you'd use public
Different
transit?
stops, but yeah, the stops have been outlined on our web page, and for those that use the system, that probably they could fathom them out fairly quickly. I don't use the bus system, so I started reading how the stops have changed, and I got confused. But that's just me. But the buses are free.
Let's talk now about the businesses that are being impacted. What is the plan to help mediate this period of time?
Well, that's we haven't seen a whole lot of action. We've seen a lot of postings on social media, both by the municipality and our tourism department, in support of, bringing people down. I'm sure that there's going to be a host of quote festivals occurring during the summer to bring people into the park in that area to generate some traffic. We're going to continue with our postings to areas outside of Port Hope in terms of during being in tourism. We know we're going to get slammed again at fishing season, so that's going to, well, on the one hand that's good, and the other hand it's bad, and but it will help somewhat in the commercial thing.
It is a long time. I mean, we're going from May to November. What is the business community telling you in response to what's going on?
Well, they're you know, like they've still got a stiff upper lip about things, but there's been suggestions, well, maybe the construction workers should work instead of like 7 to 5, 7 to 7. And I did a quick summary of the math of doing that, adding 2 extra hours a day for the next 120 days, which is the length of time, business days, that the construction will occur. And if we did add those 2 days, we could probably shorten the period to maybe mid to late October. So we'd pick up a bit. But on the other hand, then the construction companies say, well, then we're into overtime and, time and a half. And, we quoted on based on the hours that we stipulated. So they're kind of reticent to do that. So that really doesn't answer your question on the retailers. Right now, there hasn't been too much that has come up from below to in terms of loudness or noise or but I suspect that as the summer goes on, if the townspeople because it has to be the townspeople to support the businesses. If that's not occurring, then we're gonna hear some significant noise.
Well, that really makes an interesting point because a lot of those businesses in the downtown, they're small, they're independent, owner-operated businesses that tend to be more fragile. What, if anything, is being done to assist them?
Well, marketing, yes, we have retained some marketing expertise to help us. Right now, I haven't seen a whole lot from my point of view. I'm not a retailer, so I can't speak to that. But I stay, I go into a few of the establishments and business is down. I don't see any activity yet from HBIA. I don't see anything much from the Chamber of Commerce and our tourism department. Well, haven't seen a whole lot there either yet.
Now, when you're saying you don't see a whole lot, is that meaning that they aren't communicating to you, or do you mean in terms of promoting themselves and their businesses?
I don't see a whole lot of, I see the promotion from our tourism department, and I don't see anything from the HBIA yet, and I don't see anything from CA from the Chamber of Commerce. Now I'll probably get 100 calls later on today, saying that I'm wrong, but that's okay. We stir the pot a little bit. Maybe we'll get some action.
What about deliveries from suppliers?
Well, I've seen some delivery trucks that are stationed quite a ways away from their delivery points and having to hand trucks things in. The one example was a truck I saw, a Cisco truck, I think, or a Gordon's truck, on not Ontario, on Mill Street. It was quite a ways from the Waddell. So he was going to have a long push to get the product into that establishment. And I would imagine the stores on the south side, Walton, probably aren't impacted because there is that area behind that can be accessed. The north side is not quite so easy.
Summer is a critical time for businesses and tourism. What's being done to mitigate that?
Well, as I say, the promotion is still occurring in terms of our getting the message out that we are still open for business in the downtown core. But I think it's going to take more than just words. I think we're going to have some activities in and around the weekends and the shoulder days, Thursday to Sunday, to bring people in, whether it be flea markets, whether it be yard sale, whether it be open air festivals, beer, whatever it takes.
The project's extending into the Christmas shopping season. Is anyone thinking that far ahead in terms of helping out the businesses? I mean, if this gets delayed and goes even farther, but just even the May to November, that's pretty close to Christmas shopping. Is there anybody thinking about that?
Yes, well, that was one of the retailers, and I can't remember who it was, brought that up right at the public meeting before we started the project and said, this cannot go into winter. This has got to be done. Whatever it takes, it has to be done. Because if we're impacted in the summer coming out of COVID, and if we get impacted at Christmas, there may not be as many shops open come January 1. So it's top of mind.
I know there were public consultations before, but are there public consultations going on during the construction? And
Yes.
how are you hoping to hear from people?
Well, my suggestion is that we do as many town halls as is necessary and implement them now. Like monthly, let's get it out there. Let's call the meetings. Let's get all the players together. Let's get the HBIA and the tourism people and the Chamber of Commerce all in the same room with the retailers, and let's hammer this out because there's lots of good ideas out there. It's just the will to get it done. I mean, we can open up our parks. We can have open air bars. I mean, like all this stuff is available. I'm not saying bars just for the sake of bars, but we could have eating establishments. We could make it fun, but we just got to get moving on it.
I'd like to shift gears now and talk about another topic, which is the walk-in clinic. Can you bring us up to date as to the status of the walk-in clinic?
Yeah, so if you're going to blame the mayor, you got to blame me too, because we're both the drivers of this. The issue is that we have had a number of stumbling blocks. The stumbling blocks we didn't have was the ability to raise money. We got the money for it. We have the facility, beautiful facility. We have the lease. We now have the county on board. The county is taking the responsibility for the lease and the operational aspects of the clinic. We have CHC who have come on hugely, and they are going to employ the triage nurses under their wing. And we have three triage nurses ready to go. And we've had a nurse practitioner in there setting us up. Where we ran into problems, first of all, was with the CRA. And because of a tax stipulation where the money collected from donations goes to the Port Hope Healthcare Foundation, they accumulate the money and then we're going to give it directly to the clinic operations. And the CRA said, no, you can't do that. You can't use a charity to fund a private operation because, in essence, the doctors are making money. So it's a private operation. So we got over that stumbling block. The CRA miraculously changed their plans. And so the legislation hasn't been passed, but we can go ahead now and fund the way we thought. And then we have now the county involved. So we will the bills will come to the county. The Healthcare Foundation will send the money to pay these bills to the county, and that'll close the loop on that. So that's all taken care of. The latest issue we have is that we need software to handle the patient data and the doctor billing. And the company that provides it is TELUS, which have been working very diligently with us. And I must commend them, but they have such a backload that we won't be able to get their software in place till mid-June. So we have to have the software before we can bring on the doctors. And we've been, unfortunately, holding this carrot out for the doctors to come in to work the walk-in clinic, and they've made commitments, and then we've had to backtrack and say, no, we can't get it open yet. So the last thing is, I said to Alana, we can't give you a date until we know for sure. No more dates. Let's get everything in place, and then we'll go back to the doctors. So,
There's a lot
challenge.
of tension right now between doctors and walk-in clinics. I mean, even in the news recently, doctors are pushing against patients who use walk-in clinics, saying they'll drop them. Is there an issue?
You may have heard a repeat. I was on the line to Newstalk 1010 on Friday afternoon. I was in the holding queue to discuss this exact subject because I was so annoyed at what the newscaster was saying was accurate, 100%. If you're rostered with a doctor and you take the opportunity to go to a walk-in clinic, he can deroster you, and then like what happens there. And some of the doctors in Cobourg, Port Hope, are against the walk-in clinic because they think financially they're going to be impacted. And our rebuttal to that is, look, there's 4,000 unrostered patients out there. If you want to protect yourself financially, bring on more patients. Well, I don't want to work the hours. Well, I'm sorry, you don't have a monopoly. One way or another, we're going to treat these unrostered patients. And you're either going be part of the solution or you're going to be against the solution. But that's on you, not on us.
The new lead for the Ontario Health Team Northumberland, Andrea Groff, interviewed her just recently, and she talked about the massive need for primary care. From this experience that you've gone through setting up this walk-in clinic, what are the takeaways that you'd like to share with her or other municipalities about creating walk-in clinics in Northumberland?
Well, the demand is unbelievable. Anywhere I go, somebody asks me the question, what is the walk-in clinic in Hope? We had a walk-in clinic running in Port Hope for 17 years on Ontario Street, and then it moved up to Toronto Road. And they were seeing 60, 70 patients on a typical day. And on around Christmas flu season, I think they maxed out at 110 patients. And that's day in, day out, 365 days a year of, let's say, 50, even if it's 50 patients, that's, like 15,000 people, 18,000 people that need. And it's only growing because doctors are retiring. And my God, if somebody like Mark Mazzuppardi retires, his patient load's huge. You'll need two, three doctors to supplement that. And we're not attracting doctors. We're Linda Kay, who's with the doctor recruitment and their group had, they've been working tirelessly to recruit doctors. It's very, very tough. I mean, when another community offers $200,000 to a doctor to locate here, and we're not, guess where that doctor's going? And we can't afford to give that.
I think you paint a very vivid picture of the situation, but the experience of creating a walk-in clinic is what you've just walked through and you're still walking through. And I'm wondering if there were any takeaways from that experience that might encourage or help other municipalities or other places that are looking to do the same.
Brighton has already approached us, and we've tried to explain to them the process we're going through. Now we're going to be doing a lot of groundbreaking. Some of the issues we had with CRA and TELUS, we didn't expect the TELUS thing. We didn't know what we were walking into there in terms of time frame. We thought it would be just a plug-in app that was going to happen readily. Then that's not the case. So with those learnings, we can tell a pretty good story. It hasn't been that difficult. It's just that there's a lot of pieces to it.
I'd like to switch gears one more time, if I could, please. And I want to talk to you about fishing. Now, twice a year, anglers come to Port Hope to fish the Ganarasca River, and the rainbow trout is currently running at the moment. Now, I've heard this event is both a blessing and a curse. How is it a blessing, and how is it a curse?
Well, the blessing is the fish attract tourists. Rainbow fishing is not as there isn't as many fishermen at one time on the river for the rainbow trout. They're there. They're very respectful. Everything goes smooth. It works fine. When the rainbow trout fit, I'm sorry, when the salmon come in, we have not only the fishermen that come in mass numbers, but we have the tourists come in to watch the fish jump. Because in some cultures, seeing a fish jump is good luck. Okay, so that's why we get all the buses in, and that's wonderful. So, it brings in money to the downtown core and commercially and everything like that through tourists. Problem with the fishermen is in shallow water, are they fishing? Are they snagging? Are they being respectful to the environment? Are they gutting the fish just for the roe? Because there's so many fish that they can virtually walk in and grab them with their hands. The concept that we are trying to promote is, either do it respectfully and fish properly, or we're going to change the system. And some of the proposed things we could do is only allow deep water fishing, which means from the mouth of the river up to the viaduct, and then up after the dam. So we could say, okay, you can't fish in the shallow part of the river. The other thing is we could do an education program, and try and teach the fishermen to fish properly. I don't know how successful that would be. We can increase enforcement, but there's only two, like we can have bylaw, police, and the MNR. But MNR doesn't have a whole lot of resources, and they got a lot of rivers, so we can't count on them. So we budget for our own police. But if we run into problems elsewhere in terms of crime, we've only got 24 police officers, and there's maybe three, four on at a time. So if we got two at the river and two patrolling, and we run into a major crime, they're coming off the river. So enforcement is tough. The other part of the thing is we could close the park like we did at COVID, but that's not a very popular choice because you close a park, you close the walking path. So it's either going to be education or limit the fishing.
So I've seen calls for a ban. It sounds like you're not really in favor of that.
Well, it wouldn't be popular, but if the slaughter occurs and it was a slaughter again, I would fully support banning fishing in the shallow part of the river.
What's the
And
role of
I
the
have no reason to believe that it won't occur again this year. So you can see where I'm leaning. And the MNR, and we do have a group headed up. I know the deputy mayor's on it, and a group of citizens, and the professional. We have the chief police, and we have, I think, our chief protection service director, director of parks and rec, MNR, on this committee, trying to make a decision. So we will hear about that shortly.
That's the Port Hope Salmon Group. That was what I was just about to ask you about. So that's what you call the Port Hope Salmon Group. Okay.
There was a citizen's part to it, and now there's this professional part.
All right. So we'll wait for the report and see what happens. Go ahead.
I don't have a date for you, but it'll be well publicized.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about very quickly was the county police study. I know that you're chair of the Police Services Board. So, what is the position of the Port Hope Police Service Board when it comes to the county police review?
We do the way I sat in on their present the consultant's presentation to the county, and they're going to be fact gathering at this stage, asking for thoughts, opinions, and based on what they're hearing, they're going to provide a number of scenarios. Stay the same, look at alternatives, and what are the alternatives? From my point of view, as chair of the Police Services Board, I'm open to seeing this report and whatever we can do to help facilitate them getting the proper information we're going to do. Policing is a third of our budget virtually in Port Hope, similarly in Cobourg. Can we do it more in a more financially viable manner? Let's see.
Would you consider getting rid of the local police force in the town?
I don't think you ever get rid of them. I think you just change the complexion of them. That you're still going to need policing, probably going to have the same police body, but where would the administration be? Would it be at high one level handling both, or the county, the whole county?
I know one of the things that concerns some people, once you lose a police force, it's really hard, if not impossible, to go back and create one. It's just so expensive. I mean, are you prepared to go that far? I mean, to have OPP or Durham?
That was the argument against in-town policing or OPP. If you went to OPP, the chance of you ever going back was probably nil to recreate. But this isn't that scenario as I see it. It's a combination of forces, of local forces, as opposed to get rid of your force, bring in another outside. Which that may be a choice presented to us, and then it's up to the citizens to decide. Because this will be done in the public forum, believe me.
All right. Les Andrews, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Take care.
That was Port Hope Councillor Les Andrews. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.